This Luke 15 bit, the setting of it is really fascinating to me. And I realized what it was when I was in seminary and my Gospels professor, who was a world-class storyteller, helped set the scene. This is how it begins. All the tax collectors and sinners were gathered to listen to Jesus. The Pharisees and the legal experts were grumbling, saying, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." And then Jesus tells a series of parables. The lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. What we just read this morning. So with just a little bit of an imagination, you can begin to see the setting of this, right? So my professor helped me understand that one of the things Jesus did all the time was he had dinner with people. It's one of the reasons why church is a meal fellowship and the table is the center of what we do. It's what Jesus did. He had dinner with people. But he had dinner with the wrong people. The people who were dirty, who were sinners, who didn't fit. The people who would have been very obviously outcast from normal, decent, religious society. And those outcasts, all the wrong people, is who Jesus hung out with. And the gospel calls them tax collectors and sinners. It's kind of a catch-all term for people that the church, so this is how we can think of people the church hates. People the church hates. And there's Jesus, who has dinner with them all the time. So this part of Luke where he's telling these stories is almost certainly happening in a house where Jesus is eating with the wrong people. Because the Pharisees, the holy people, the church people, say, "Look at him, he's eating with those crazy people again, those sinners. How can he even do this? He's got to be contaminated too." So imagine Jesus sitting at a table with all the wrong people. And then at the windows, which would not have been glass, or at the doorways, are the holy folks looking in, saying loudly, "Look at this Jesus. He even eats with tax collectors and sinners." And then Jesus gets up and he kind of walks to the doorway or the window where these people are accusing them and stands there. And there in front of him are the holy church people, and behind him are all of the sinners. And he tells these stories. So that's the setting. You've got two audiences. You have all of these very bad people and all of these very good people. And Jesus tells three stories. The last one's the longest. And it's what we know as the prodigal son. A certain man had two sons. The younger son said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the inheritance." And the father divided his estate. Soon afterwards, the younger son gathered everything together and took a trip to a land far away. And there he wasted all his money. He lived the quintessential bad life. And he drops to the very bottom of the heap in the culture. Feeding pigs would have been a terrible, 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 sinful, gross, horrible job. And that's what he ends up doing. And he hits bottom. And I found something this week that I had never seen before. And it's the speech that the younger son writes and then the speech that he gives, and they're slightly different. It's a three-part sermon. 3 points, the son says, in verses 18 to 20. This is the speech he writes. Okay, I'm feeding pigs. If I just go home, I could feed the chickens at my father's house. Chickens aren't as bad as pigs, and at least the chicken people have food, so I'll go do that. And this is what I'll say. And he writes a speech, and he says, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. 2, I no longer deserve to be called your son. 3, take me on as one of your hired hands." And he gets up and he goes. And this is what I wrote in my notes. When he gets to the Father, And then I realized my mistake. It's the father who gets to him. The father leaves the house and finds the son. And the son gives a speech. Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. Exactly the same. Point two, I no longer deserve to be called your son. Exactly the same. Point three, and the father interrupts him. And he never gets to point three. While he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was moved with compassion. And his father ran to him and hugged him and kissed him. So you have to imagine this. There's the son coming back, bloody feet, torn clothes, full of pig slop. And his father is hugging him and kissing him, and he's trying to get his speech out. I've sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. Everybody, go get him a robe and get some sandals for his feet. And kill that fatted calf. We're going to throw a party because a son of mine is lost and is found. And the speech gets cut short. And what was going to be, just let me be a hired hand. He doesn't even ask to go inside. I don't even want to go into your house. I don't live here anymore. Just let me live with the chickens. Is point number three becomes this celebration of the party. And a robe and a ring and sandals for his bloody feet. I mean, it's just incredible. And Jesus is telling this story very clearly. The younger son is these sinners behind Jesus who is defending. And very clearly, the old son, the older son, is the Pharisees, the legal experts, the church people, the holy ones, who looks awfully bad in this. And you can see the sinners smiling and almost saying, ha! And you can hear echoes of the Magnificat with Mary's song at the beginning of Luke, where he says, lift up the lowly and cast down the mighty. And you can hear this. And the older son looks so bad. And now the older son was in the field and coming home, and he approached the house and he heard the music and the dancing. And this older son called one of the servants and he said, what's going on in there? And the servant replied, your brother has arrived and your father has slaughtered the fatted calf, which was a high, high, high honor. He received his son back safe and sound. And then the older son was furious and he didn't want to enter, but his father came out and he begged him. He answered his father, look, I've served you all these years, and I've never disobeyed your instructions, and yet you had never given me so much as a goat that I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours returns, after gobbling up your inheritance on prostitutes, you slaughter the fatted calf for him. And he does not look good. And it's like, yeah! Get the stinking older son. And Jesus is pointing his finger, and these sinners back there are like, yeah! Boo on you! And this is this real tension thing. Except, that's actually not what happens. This is the second thing that I've never seen before. Look at verse 28 again. Well, listen, because I don't make you look. Listen. And the older son was furious, and he didn't want to enter. But the father came out and begged him. The father gives the exact same mercy and grace to the older son as he gave to the younger son. There are two prodigal sons. There are two sons who have their eyes fixed on the inheritance. There are two sons standing outside the house, refusing to come in. And their stories are different, and their reasons are different, but they both are the same. They are both outside, not wanting to go in and feast, not wanting to come to the table, not wanting to go home with the Father. And for both of them, the Father comes outside to them, to bathe them, to embrace them, to invite them in. Here's the good news for us. There is no inheritance. There is only the love and mercy of this Father freely given. The prodigal son is us, whether we think of ourselves as the younger or the older. We all stand outside of God, outside of, and say, we're all chasing something, right? We're all looking for something to make us happy. The younger son was looking for kind of immediate, give me all the money, and then he goes and has fun. But it was about what he could get out of it. The younger son thinks the exact same thing. He's just going about it in a different way. He's going to follow the rules, and he's going to wait around for dad to die, then he gets his money. But they're both just after the money. They're both just after the inheritance. And this is the good news, that the inheritance is irrelevant. That what is here given is the mercy of God. The Father comes out. The Father runs out. The Father hugs and embraces and kisses and begs to come in. And it's not about the inheritance. It is about this mercy of the Father. For us, we can ask ourselves questions. Who do we identify with? The younger, the older, the people outside, the Pharisees and the scribes accusing, or the sinners. Maybe we think we're Jesus, standing between, standing up for the little ones. And there's correction for all of us. The story is a story of mercy. Mercy that we've all been given. There is no inheritance. There is no thing. There is no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. There is just the rainbow. There is just the beauty and the mercy. And what are we going to do with that mercy that has been given to us? We are stewards of God's mercy. And whether we think we're sitting at the table as a sinner, if we're standing between as some kind of hero, or we realize that we're outside pointing fingers, and maybe we're inside pointing fingers at the outside. What we need to realize is that the Father has come to us in whatever state we're in to give us mercy. And how are we going to be stewards of that mercy for everybody involved? So that no one wins, so that no one loses, so that everyone is at the table. So that everybody has a goblet of wine and a leg of lamb. I don't know if you think of yourself as a sinner or a saint, but you have been given God's mercy. I have been given God's mercy. And what will we do with that? God, thank you for this beautiful story. Thank you for standing up for sinners. Thank you for standing up for people who think they're holy. God, would you help us be good stewards of your mercy and share it and give it freely as you do. We acknowledge that we cannot do it ourselves. We desperately need you. So work in us. Help us to give up our false selves. To accept our identity as the beloved. Amen.